Before there was grunge, there was our guest tonight, The Scientist. Now, that may be drawing a slightly long bow, but there's no doubt that among the bands from Seattle, whether Nirvana or Mudhoney or Soundgarden, there was always a very high awareness of Australian music, and in particular, The Scientists. I mean, people like John Spencer are now coming out acknowledging their influence too. Of course, in their own time and place, The Scientists never really got their due. When they picked up their Perth punk roots and moved to Sydney in 1981, their stated objective was to reduce music to its absolutely most primitive level and take it back to the swamp, as it were. They wore shirts even louder than their guitars, and what they got was bottled, basically, and eventually they broke up, dissolute in London in 1987. But with the way the wheels turned, The Scientists have come back together to claim some of the credit that's rightfully theirs. So, will you welcome back to Studio 22, back from the undead, The Scientists.
There was a time I did cry. It would have cut me up inside. Now I'm not bothered at all. In fact, I'm walking tall. They say care about you, hard to believe, but I know it was true. We had love. We had love. We had love. We had love. Well, I forgot what it was like. Don't dream of.
I sort of had this idea for years. When punk rock came along, I kind of went on a big search to try and find it the way it had worked for me, and that wasn't sort of doing it, you know, the way as set out by Malcolm McLaren et al. It was sort of, I don't know, I just kind of had an idea in my head, but I couldn't really put it into any form, and it was, tried it with a few different lineups of people, and it just happened to happen when we got into a rehearsal room together, and it was done on pure blind faith. I told Tony, if you want to join a band, come and join the Scientists, come over to Sydney, that's where we're going. We didn't know that it was going to sound like that.
Bone house and flesh, blood and we were pretty brutal in our sound, you know, and maybe it was swampy, maybe it was what, but, I mean, it was pretty brutal. I mean, I have images of when we were in England, and, I mean, we got pretty hip in London, and everyone was trying to get us on their tour, so we ended up on all these tours, and we ended up on Susie and the Banshees tour, and, you know, that was a 30-date tour all around England, you know, with 3,000 people every night. The thing is that, you know, Susie and the Banshees also had loyal fans that would queue up to get to the front row every night, you know, and every night they'd be confronted with us, you know, and I almost felt sorry for them, you know, because for 30 days, because they'd go to every show and for 30 days or 30 dates, they'd have to put up with it, with us, and we were at our most kind of brutal, you know, and you could see that was putting people to the kind of limit of human endurance almost, you know.
Isn't it? Funny, sometimes I wonder who ever thought that one up.
what really did happen was we, because the music was simple on a harmonic level and a melodic level, it forced us to sort of find new ways of making it interesting and kind of trick people into thinking they were listening to this primitive rock. But that's why we were doing things in 5/4 and 7/8 and doing funny rhythm things and having odd structures to the songs. We weren't trying to sort of make those things apparent, but they were just ways of kind of underpinning the songs to make them more exciting and kind of breathe life into the sort of rock cliches that were sort of the palette that we had to work with.
Yeah. Thank you.